did it, Emily. We're officially halfway to episode 10. What a milestone.
And look, there's even a star post here to save our progress. Go on and give it a spin, Josh.
Whoa, look at that ring of stars. It's so beautiful.
Quick, jump through it.
What?
Guess I'll just have to push you.
Hey. Oh, neat. A special stage. You could have given me more warning, though.
Sorry. It's just that I suddenly had this idea.
What idea?
Well, in our regular episodes of the VGM Jukebox, we don't talk too much about ourselves. We try to focus on delivering other people's suggestions and testimonials instead. So I thought a special stage could be a nice opportunity for us to take time out to just relax and chat, and maybe give the listeners a chance to get more familiar with us.
So basically, we won't be giving testimonials or playing any VGM tunes. We'll just be talking?
I think it's worth a shot.
And if listeners get bored, they could just run into some red spheres or something and skip out early. It's only a bonus stage after all.
Exactly.
So what should we talk about first?
First, I think it would be cool to point out to listeners that we didn't really know each other very well before we started this podcast.
That is true. Probably the first time I talked to you was when we... When was the first time I talked to you?
I actually don't remember, but it was over instant messaging. So we had typed to each other, but we had not actually spoken. I don't believe we'd spoken at all until we recorded our first episode. You had been doing a bunch of VGM karaoke's over at the Legacy Music Hour, and I thought they were awesome, but you didn't seem to be commenting on their message board, so I just didn't think I could contact you to tell you how great I thought those songs were. Until one day, I think it was you, dropped the bomb that you were actually some other username and had been posting for quite a while, and I had not linked the two in my head. I did not know that was you.
Well, Emily, I thank you very much for your kind words about my VGM karaoke.
Well, let's explain. How about you explain what a VGM karaoke actually is?
Well, VGM karaoke, as defined by the Legacy Music Hour, is just when you try to sing along with a video game song. And you can have words, but you don't really need to have words. You can try to mumble through it.
Did you get the idea to do VGM karaoke's from the Legacy Music Hour, or was this something that you were kind of already doing?
That's a good question. I'm pretty sure I got the idea to finish a song and perform it from the Legacy Music Hour, but I also think that it's sort of a natural tendency when you've been playing a video game a lot, and I think probably, I don't know, there's got to be a percentage of the population that has lyrics to some video game song that they've just been, you know, playing a lot. I had one for Super Mario World, the first stage.
Oh, yeah?
But it was kind of dumb. It was like, hi-ho, the witch is dead, something like that. It sounded similar to me, so I just started singing those lyrics. But then I had some Sonic lyrics, too.
And your lyrics seem to just come very naturally to you.
Yeah, well, it takes some effort to, finish the music, but, usually, if I just listen to a song enough, I'll think of something. That's where, like, the golf game video game karaoke's are coming from now, is just sitting in traffic and just trying to entertain myself and just going crazy. But once I get a little theme to a song, then, it gets really exciting. So... What are some of your first video game memories besides singing along?
I believe the first video game memory I have was my father showing me the Nintendo Entertainment System that we had bought for the family. When we bought the NES, I was 4 years old, and it was really intended for my older brother, who was 9 at the time, but my father wanted to show it to me before he revealed it so that I would kind of understand what it was and what it did. So I remember him bringing me into my brother's room and trying to get me to understand what I was looking at. And he was explaining to me, you know, that, well, this is a video game system. It's gonna create images inside of it. And I distinctly remember thinking, if it's going to create images inside of it, why doesn't it have windows? And I couldn't wrap my mind around the concept of a device putting images on the television. I didn't get it, but I was intrigued.
I think that must be some sort of experience that I almost feel like I had, but I just don't have as much clarity about it. But yeah, the idea of a magic box that changes what your TV does did seem ridiculous, and the idea that you could control what was on the TV. And it almost seemed like back then that arcades were different, you know, like they were not TVs hooked up to a computer, but they were this whole other machine that required a whole enormous sort of setup to make one gameplay.
Right. That's true. So you were an arcade person then?
A little bit. You know, my dad actually worked in video games.
Really?
Yeah. He was like a businessman, basically, and he worked with some Japanese companies doing the distribution of those games. I mean, I actually don't even really remember this, but there's a video of me. I was about 3 or 4 years old, and there's a Pac-Man sit-down machine in my kitchen, and I'm, like, playing Pac-Man.
Wow.
As a tiny little kid.
Was it yours? Was that your family's?
Probably not. He probably just had it in there until they found a place to put it or something like that.
Or maybe he brought it home to show the family.
Yeah, something. It may have been getting passed around among other people at the company, stuff like that.
Wow, that's crazy. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think some of my experience being a kid made me worse at video games, maybe. Because sometimes me and my brothers would go to his warehouse that had a bunch of arcade games, and we would just open the coin slot, and we would just give ourselves infinite credits until we beat a game. So I kind of feel like I may have some soft gaming edges from that experience.
Oh, that's funny.
But although, you know, I did have this sort of charmed video game lifestyle, I didn't have the most kind of basic thing to have, which was an NES.
Right.
I had a Master System, and then I actually had the family computer, the Japanese NES, but I couldn't get more games on it or anything.
Right, of course.
And I hated the fact that I had a family computer, because it's like, why do all my friends get to play Mario 3 and Mario Brothers, and I'm stuck with like these weird games that we just happen to have? But now, that family computer is worth a lot of money. Too
right,
bad,
so what know. Happened to it? Where is it?
I have no idea.
No!
I have no idea where the family computer is.
No!
What was your first video game system? Or what did you have growing up?
It was the NES. That was the first one. And I have to say, I didn't love video gaming until we got a Sega Genesis. I enjoyed the Nintendo Entertainment System. I thought it was cool. I liked what I was doing. I actually think that I was introduced to the NES at almost the perfect time because I was not old enough to care about the rules of a game necessarily. I wasn't angry that the games were unfair. And I was young enough to just be interested in the magic of the medium itself. Because those games are really frustrating a lot of the time. And if you're a little bit older, you get ticked. But I was still in the stage where I was just excited that I was making a Ninja Turtle move around on the screen. When we got a Sega Genesis, that's really when things changed. And I actually remember the first time I saw one and played one. It was in the department store Sears. They had a video game section back then, and it was at the top of the escalator. So you would kind of... I remember my mom was very paranoid about escalators and being hurt on escalators, so I was not allowed to run or walk up. I had to wait. So this was excruciating when you're young to have to wait as you see the banner that says, you know, video game center come into view. But they had a demo of the first Sonic the Hedgehog there, and I remember that I waited in line for this, a really long line to try this game, and when I started playing it, like, I just couldn't stop smiling. It just felt so good, and I thought, this is what I want to be feeling when I play a game. I don't want to be getting super frustrated and not being able to get anywhere. And I think, if memory serves, I got to the boss and beat the boss But I don't know if that's just, you know, my repainting my history to be super cool or what.
You may have very well been a natural. I'm looking at the games you beat this year, and it seems like you're embarrassing other people. You're embarrassing me.
Oh, please.
Just looking at this.
Please.
You beat so many games just this year, and I don't even know, I don't even want to know how many games you beat in your whole life. But I'm looking at the list of games you beat here. You beat Comics Zone without continues?
I did.
That's absurd. Nobody can
I
do that.
I love that game,
That's
actually.
A great game, but it's not easy.
It's not. I think half of the battle is knowing where stuff is, honestly. There are some routes I think you kind of have to take to set yourself up well. But yeah, that game's hard. At the end, you're down to like the last sliver of life, and it gets a little cheap at the end. Anytime you hit an object to get through it, like you bust down a door or you break a block or something, that takes away some of your health. And in the last stage of the game, they put obstacles in your way just to shave your health down because you have to bust through them. So by the time you get to the last boss, you are in the red zone. And I didn't do it correctly the first time, actually. There are two endings. There's a good ending and a bad ending. And I actually like the bad ending a lot. I think the bad ending is very cool. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed that game, and it was hard, but I like beat-em-ups a lot. So that might have kind of helped me continue hammering away at it until I could get through it.
I actually really like beat-em-ups a lot, too. And this year, I got Streets of Rage 3.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, and I play it on the Wii. I just download games on the Wii now, mainly. But I can't beat that game. Can you beat Streets of Rage, Shay?
I have not played a Streets of Rage game.
Oh.
This is on my list of things to do.
Well, it's amazing how many games they were making for our future selves back in the day. You
it's
know?
True. At the time that I was playing these systems, I was not really old enough to buy games myself. So there are a lot of games that I missed because I just wasn't buying anything. I had to wait for my birthday, or I had to wait for the holidays or something like that. Which I think is kind of unfortunate, because now, as an adult, I'm going back and buying things, and now the prices are insane. Or they're getting more insane every day that goes by.
Oh, right. Well, you're trying to actually purchase the original cartridges and stuff like that.
Yes. And I kind of have a rule that I don't want to be paying more than $40 for a video game. I feel like that's the line. Yeah. And all the video games that I want are more than $40. It's just really frustrating.
So list off some of your, what's it called? Your vintage systems that come into regular play in your household.
Okay. And then you have to do this too. Why don't you go first? You talk about your systems.
All right. I have a Nintendo that's in my closet. I could bust it out and play Tetris on it. I do have the Tetris. But you know what? I don't even have the RGB TV or the tube TV to play Nintendo on.
Right.
So I can't even make Duck Hunt work. And
yeah. For those who don't know, light guns do not work on non-CRT TVs.
Oh, CRT, yeah. What did I say? RGB?
Well, no, tube TV. Same thing.
Oh, okay. I mean, my friends had all these great games that I couldn't play, like Castlevania, Mega
right.
Man, Mario, Metroid, Zelda. Oh, it breaks my heart just saying those games right now, knowing that my past self couldn't play them. But anyways,
I'm feeling sad for you too, I have to say.
But they would also sometimes have Double Dragon, or what's the other game? Ghostbusters. Yeah, that's
oh,
right.
Oh, Ghostbusters. Yeah.
And those games were way better on the Master System.
Than anything else?
No, just then on the Nintendo.
Ah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
So how did you wind up with a Master System instead of a Nintendo? Just because, you know, it seemed like everybody had a Nintendo.
I have no idea. I think, you know, it might have been like they just had the system in their office and my dad brought it home or something like that.
Yeah. Well, now, did you say that your dad played these games as well?
Yeah, he played them sometimes, you know, they were always around. He's pretty good at shooters, and one day I was obsessed with this pinball game at the pizza place down the street from my old house where I used to live with them. It was called Dr. Dude, and I'd been playing this game
Dr.
a
Dude.
Lot. That's a great game. And then I just invited him one day, and I was like, in his first try, he got right below the score that I had been so proud of. So he's got some kind of gaming skill. But I don't think he plays too often anymore. But, sorry. So my vintage systems, I was talking about my Nintendo in the closet, and I didn't even get to this.
And then we got way off track.
Nintendo in the closet right now. My brother was kind enough to get me a Genesis that's supposed to work, but it's like a clone. But mostly, I just play Wii. Mm-hmm. All the games that I buy from the virtual console, I know it's not perfect. Sometimes you get a star and Mario turns invisible instead of flashing at
instead
that
of flickering,
rate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm all about that. I mean, I like to play the original hardware, but it's not because I'm going for a pure experience. It's more just because most of my systems are the same ones I had as a kid. So I like that I'm still playing the Sega Genesis that I had when I was 8.
No, there's something magical about firing up an old computer and it running.
Yes, it's true. But that said, I definitely 100% support people who play their games in other ways. I just think it's cool that people are playing them.
I 99% support them.
99? What's the 1%?
1% is, would be cooler if you had the original system.
Oh, that 1% cool point.
Yeah. That's the it factor right there.
Let's see. Let me... Were you finished? You're still...
Oh, no. I was just going to ask you about your early experiences with the music of games. I think early experiences with video game music, I tended to view the music in a negative light, I think, a lot of times because of... I think everybody does, actually. Or most people do. They think it's like the fake music that exists out of necessity instead of like a... different genre, maybe.
I would agree with you.
But I do remember having experiences. I think maybe the earliest experience where I was conscious of the music was maybe playing Dig Dug. And I always wanted...
I love that game.
It's a great game, but if you stop walking, like, the music stops.
Yeah.
So sometimes you, like, try to make the longest path through the thing so you can keep hearing the song. I remember that. Outrun on the Master System, I used to... They had that sound... It's not a sound test, but it has a little hand and you could, like, change the station.
Right.
And realizing that I liked Splash Zone the most was a special moment. I'm like, oh no, not Splash Zone, Splash Wave. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Starlight Zone, I think, naturally lends itself to singing along.
That's another fantastic one.
Toe Jam and Earl's Beautiful. What about you?
My experience with... video game music, though, again, since I was so young, I actually don't think I thought of video game music as being fundamentally different from any other kind of music. It was just another type.
Hmm.
Because I would actually just put cartridges in to the system to listen to the music, and then I would be done. I wouldn't even play the game, but I thought that was a worthwhile, you know, way of spending my time with the Nintendo Entertainment System was to listen to... to just put in a cartridge and listen to the opening theme or something, and then I was done. But sometimes I wonder, do I like that sound because I liked the experience of video games, or did I just like the sound and then I grew to like video games in concert with that? I'm not really sure where it begins.
Yeah, that is a tough question. Is it possible to like video game music without any nostalgic attachment to the experience of playing games? I would hope that it is. I mean, I personally think that some video game music is just really beautifully composed. And if you can appreciate the fact that they're using this kind of clunky old piece of hardware,
right,
and a tiny little space, tiny little software to create the sound, maybe that helps you appreciate it. Or maybe you can actually enjoy those kind of more pure, if harsh, sounds sometimes. But also, you know, I think there's this tendency that people tend to have where they value the musician, where they value a musician not only for the music they produce, but the sort of cultural space that they exist in. And that includes, like, their image, their sound, their lyrics, and stuff like that. And I think that as much as you may think that video game music is not like real music or something, in some ways it actually strips some of these extra components away from the experience of listening to music and becomes a more pure listening experience, at least for me.
I didn't, along these lines, I didn't pay attention to video game composers until very recently. I would think of things in terms of games and series, like, okay, this is music from Sonic the Hedgehog, this is music from Metroid, but I didn't follow individual composers. They're kind of like non-entities. They're becoming more so entities, but they were almost invisible, I think, in the past, at least here in America. I know Japan does things a little bit differently.
Yeah, when I downloaded the Streets of Rage music, Yuzo Koshiro. Yeah, when I downloaded the Streets of Rage music, somehow, like, the Apple iTunes recognizes Yuzo Koshiro.
Really?
Yeah, and so if you upload your Yuzo Koshiro tracks to your iTunes playlist, you get, like, this cool picture of him, like, kind of standing there, like, looking at you.
That's cool. Awesome!
But you played some new games, too, and you beat some new games.
I play some.
What are some of the coolest, most impressive, most skilled things you've ever done in a video game?
This is a hard question. I don't know about you, but I'm not ever really sure if what I have done is impressive at all cool.
I think beating Comic Zone is good, so I'm sure it is.
Oh, thank you.
And it's subjective, sure.
I guess I could say things that I'm proud of. I do have all of the achievements or trophies in the Mass Effect trilogy, so across all three games I have all of the achievements. And something else that I do is I catch a lot of shiny Pokemon. I don't know if you're familiar with Pokemon or shiny Pokemon.
I know Pokemon. I don't know what a shiny Pokemon is.
A shiny Pokemon has nothing special to it other than the fact that it's a different color. So,
what game is this on?
This is every Pokemon game post the originals. So everything from Gold and Silver on. In Gold and Silver, there's actually a story moment where you come across a Gyarados that's red. And it's a big deal. And that was the introduction of shiny Pokemon to the world. But so anyway, basically, and I don't want to go into this too much because it borders on... It's weird that I'm into this much. But
I don't know what's happening right now.
All right, so... Okay, no. You're playing Pokemon, you're walking around in the tall grass, and you hit a random encounter and you find a Pokemon, right? This is how Pokemon goes.
Yeah.
Every time one of those encounters happens, you have a 1 in 8,192 chance of finding a Pokemon that's a different color.
Wow.
So, there are a couple ways that you can get them. Some people just random encounter until they find one, which takes a long time. Some people, particularly for legendaries, will encounter the legendary, restart the game, encounter, restart, and repeat this process until they get a shiny, which also takes a long time. But in Pokemon Diamond and Pearl, they introduce this thing called the Poke Radar, which is sort of like a mini game that increases your chances as you follow certain steps, kind of. So there's some skill, there's some chance to it, and I really like that little mini game, and I can't explain why, but so I spend a lot of time what they call shiny hunting with the Poke Radar and getting lots of shiny Pokemon.
Okay.
What? You don't want to go any further into it.
I kind of do, but I kind of don't. I'm kind of intrigued and kind of grossed out at the same time.
What about you? Give me some impressive stuff. Or gross or scary stuff.
Somehow, one day, I beat Castle of Shikigami.
I don't know what this is.
It's a bullet hell game. You're like a little... I think you're like a little woman on a broom or something.
Oh, so, it's a cute-em-up or something.
It's kind of like a cute-em-up, but it's not super cute. It's just that you're a person on a broom instead of a spaceship. Well, I do like cute-em-ups. I did beat Twin B, Detana... Twin B. Oh, that's such a good game. I like shooting games a lot and beat 'em ups. I like simple stuff, but yeah, I don't know how I beat Castle of Shikigami. I felt like I was in a trance-like state where I couldn't look at the TV or away from the TV, and I was like weaving through these bullets in the last boss, and my friends were like, whoa, you're not doing that. No, this is not
real. Oh, you had people in the room with you.
Yeah, I actually had people, and I don't think, I mean, hopefully they bring it up one day and like, hey, remember you did that? But they're the kind of people who might never do that. But yeah, so I think that was it. But I can't repeat that experience. I got Castle of Shikigami 2, and I've been having trouble going into that trance-like state.
I know what you're talking about, though. I've beaten Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine on the hardest difficulty.
Oh, wow.
And when you're playing the final stage on that difficulty, things are moving so fast you are no longer consciously thinking. You're actually sitting there and you kind of feel like you're watching yourself do it. Because yeah. You're not thinking, I need to put this here or this here. It's just like your brain is functioning beyond what you're capable of keeping up with. So I know what you mean. That must be exactly where you were when you were doing the Castle of Shikigami and winning.
Yeah, you're making me want to play video games right now. After this, we're going to play video games, right?
All right.
Too bad we can't play through this Google chat thing.
I know.
Okay. I think a really good question to maybe perhaps wrap this up on is, but I love this question, and it is, how do you go about listening to video game music in your daily life? How is this music incorporated into your non-game life? Or is it?
I actually bought an MP3 player recently. It was the first time I've owned an MP3 player. I have a joke with my friends that I'm always 10 years behind in certain things. MP3 players was one of them. So I bought an MP3 player specifically because I discovered there was firmware out on the internet that allows you to play the ripped files of video game soundtracks directly. So the MP3 player actually emulates from those files, as opposed to having MP3s that play or something like that. So I bought this MP3 player, I installed the firmware, and I put on 7 systems worth of tracks.
Wait, what?
You have
thousands and thousands and thousands?
Yes, because the ripped files are so small.
But did you click and click and click and clack through all these lists and stuff
like
that?
Yes, I did.
Well, you're a monster.
I don't know. Sometimes I do these things and I think, should I be ashamed that I've done this? Should I not admit this to people? But yeah, so I have this MP3 player and it's tiny. And sometimes I hold it in my hand and I think, I can't believe that, you know, the entire Genesis library plus all these other systems is in this tiny little thing that I'm holding in my hand. Because when I was a kid, that's what I really wanted. I wanted a way to actually listen to all the soundtracks from all the Sega Genesis games easily in the car. And the only way you could do that was by recording kind of a less than stellar quality version on a cassette tape from your television. But what I love about having this MP3 player is I can just look at it and go, oh, I wonder what games there are that start with the letter Q. And then I'll look at the letter Q and I'll go, oh, that seems like a funny name for a game. I'll listen to that. And I just love being able to constantly discover this stuff, and then it's so easy for me to do that. It's not like searching around on YouTube or anything. It's just, it's all there. So I can just decide at any time to explore whatever I want.
Yeah.
What about you?
This is a funny question for me a little bit, because I actually don't usually listen to video game music while I'm playing the video game.
Oh!
When I was a kid, I got my appendix out, and Sonic 2 was new, and my dad's friend let me borrow like this Aerosmith box set. And so once in a while I would drop in on the regular Sonic music. And I got pretty into it, especially Hilltop Zone. I think I turned down Aerosmith when I was at Hilltop Zone.
Right, you were like Steven Tyler, you're great and all, but...
But... I loved that. Anyways, not that I didn't like video game music, but it was just... You spend so much time playing video games that it kind of can be used as an opportunity to explore music or just listen to whatever. And even today, if I play a video game, I might just listen to a podcast or put on a record.
Right.
But in my real life, I mostly listen to video game music now.
Mm-hmm.
Like driving, it calms me down. jogging, it makes it seem more fun and game-like. And mostly it is for games that I've never played. I usually listen to the mixtapes you made for the Legacy Music Hour, or I'll listen to a golf games playlist that I made.
I love that you love these golf game soundtracks. I just think that's just a really fun tidbit.
Well, hey, I'm not the only one out there who is.
No, yeah. Actually.
And
it's quite a following.
But those, I think it's especially this composer named Yumi Kinoshita.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wrote like the most beautiful melodies I've ever heard in my life. And it's almost, there's so much good video game music. I really feel like I'm rediscovering the Beatles or something like that sometimes.
Right.
But I feel like with video game music, there's more of those. More of those exciting musical revelations to happen that I kind of didn't think was going to happen.
Can I tell you something interesting?
Sure, sure.
The composer who composed Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, I want to say Masato Nakamura.
Yeah, dreams come true.
Yeah, he's in a band.
Yeah.
And there are actually recordings of a lot of these tunes.
What?
With his band singing lyrics to them.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, I just found out about this from someone who has written into the VGM jukebox with suggestions, Sean
what?
S. Let me know about this.
Oh my gosh, I gotta look that up.
Yeah, we were discussing how great the ending theme to Sonic 2 is. And he said, are you aware that there are words to the song and it's like a very hyper-dramatic love song?
Oh.
And this kind of blew my mind, and I found the recording on YouTube and I thought, it made me wonder what came first. Did it exist as a video game composition first and then get adapted by his band? Or the other way around.
Wow.
And that's weird to me. It's weird to think that maybe it existed as a hyper-dramatic love song and then became a video game tune. So, I think it's probably time for us to get back to the regular world now. We've been in here for a while.
Does time even pass in here?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'm a little dizzy, so it's probably a good idea. Listeners, how did you feel about this special stage? Did it make you dizzy? Let us know by leaving us a comment at thevgmjukebox.blogspot.com or email us at thevgmjukebox@gmail.com.
We'll go back to meeting up at the jukebox as usual after the motion sickness wears off. See you there!